Welcome, strangers, to the show. I'm the one who should be lying low. Saw the knives out, turned my back. Heard the train coming, stayed right on that track. In the middle, in the middle, in the middle of a dream. I lost my shirt, I found my rings. I've done all the dumb things.
Yeah, them dumb things, this going out to my brothers down there in Dundale. Dealing with that disaster that them guards are there and not jail. Thinking we're getting our welfare, huh? Thinking we're getting our healthcare,
then.
Huh?
Think
about if it was your son. Now think
about saying that something. All of the beer into the enormous mug. And by the enormous mug, I do not mean me.
though that is actually true.
No,
as well.
It is just an interim. In his room state.
It's one mug before the second mug.
Yes.
Yeah, so Monster Magnet. Can you explain to me where Monster Magnet sits in...
in the pantheon of the 90s?
Yeah, because it's not...
I would say... In stoner rock space, right in that.
Okay, so
that
you wouldn't call it grunge, would you?
No, I would not. No, it's got more in common with. I would say it's probably, it's that stoner kind of doom rock stuff that Queens of the Stone Age started out doing, because Caius, who were around before Queens of the Stone Age, and we did the Brent Björk album previously. This is much more like what they sound like. Monster Magnet sound. I mean, there's definite Black Sabbath overtones to it. There's obviously, you know, a lot of that kind of early 70s heavy metal. They covered Kick Out the Jams, like every other fucking band in the history of the universe has covered Kick Out the Jams. So there's a nod to Detroit proto punk of the early 70s. But yeah, it's stoner rock is kind of the generic catch-all, I suppose you'd use for it.
Or he's got a very
singing about sex and drugs and more sex and more drugs.
Yeah, he's got a very Soundgarden vocal aesthetic. There's that word again.
He's got a great. Well, actually, Dave Weindorf is the dude's name, and it's another one of those bands that is. All about the lead singer. I mean, the band is still around, but I think he's the only dude left from it who started off. Ironically, he had an overdose in about 10 years ago, and he's gone clean. I've heard the most recent album. It's not as good. And apparently he's ballooned in weight since he got off all the gear, which is kind of disappointing for him. I'm not sure how much more sex he's having now that he doesn't have all the drugs. But yeah, this album was from the peak of his voice and the sound of this band. I think he's got a very I think if you took away his voice, it would just be another band pumping really really cool riffs, but you know, I think you really need the vocal part to make it work, and that's the story of all music, is it not?
And we'll get to that a little bit later on, I guess.
Bezo loves a foreshadow, folks.
I do love a foreshadowing. I enjoyed it. It was sort of like not... It had a grunge sort of feel to it, but the music didn't sound great. Like, it was way too upbeat and sort of...
It was rock and roll.
It was too rock and roll to be... to be grunge, but in an enjoyable listen. And other than the single, I don't know whether I really recognised any of the songs. So
yeah, it's no, I was introduced to this band by a mate of mine from preschool, who we've been friends.
Of course, you did.
Yeah, we've been friends for a long time. best man at his wedding, and not vice versa, because my brother was my best man. But he also introduced me to the AC/DC live album, and in the same format, which was via tape deck on his busted ass Nissan Pintara station wagon, generally going somewhere fast far too quickly to go and drink far too much beer. So shouts to my man Dorso for that, because he put me onto these guys. And the thing is that obviously he had a tape, and I remember thinking, fuck, every song on this album is really cool. And then years later, I thought, that can't be right. I mean, not every song on this album can be really cool. He must have just had a compilation tape. But then I actually got the album and went, oh, fuck, here you go. You get fucking Crop Circle, and there's just a whole lot of really good songs on this album. Like, it's Crop Circle, Power Trip, Space Lord, Temple of Your Dreams, Third Eye Landslide, Bummer, fucking Tractor, Tractor's the greatest drug song in all history. Literally the lyrics. I've got a knife in my back, I've got a hole in my arm, I'm driving the tractor on the drug farm. Good on you, bro. At Atomic Clock. There's so many good just songs I really fucking like on this album. And that's why I picked it, because I really like the songs on it. That's about all intelligent I have to say about this album, except that this album was written in Las Vegas, and there's a version that's on Spotify is like a bonus version that has the live stuff on the end of it, and you get to understand a band a bit better when you listen to them live, and he's a sleazy fucker. He's just a sleazy, dirty, dirty old man, basically. Which is why I was thinking about this band. It's why I was thinking about this band this week was within the light of Donald Trump, who's another sleazy, dirty old man. Because there's so many lyrics on this album that sound like they're about Donald Trump. Particularly the one about one from, I think it's Third Eye Landslide, where he's talking about things are looking good from where I am in the United States. Things are looking good from where I sit in the United States of who gives a shit. Sucking love from wherever I can. Cashing Satan's checks with my dick in my hand. That's basically Donald Trump.
Yeah, except he's not the leader of the free world.
Well,
but anyway.
Pretty much. That's basically... how could you listen to that and not think of Donald Trump? Basically, that's...
Yeah. That's true.
So yeah, Monster Magnet. Thank you for coming.
Yeah, it was enjoyable. I have to say that it was sort of dumb rock.
Yeah, it's fucking dumb
rock, but with like you said, if it was a crap vocalist, you know, pretty disposable, but his vocal's pretty good. So
yeah, you kind of have to, you got to suspend disbelief and buy into the slight ridiculousness of it in order to really enjoy it. If you're sitting there going, this is fucking bullshit, come on, man. Cashing Satan's checks with your dick in your hand, get the fuck. But if you suspend disbelief, it can be quite fun. And if you take it as a satire of macho cockheads, which I've always felt that's what it was, rather than actually being a script for macho cockheads. That's where we are. Shall we get into the new albums, Mr. Beasley? Shall we get into some Tribe?
Some Tribe. So
the people are excited that we're reviewing the Tribe.
Well, so
like one person on Twitter went, "Oh, the new Tribe album."
Yeah. So. The De La Soul album last week I was disappointed with, because it just sounded like a sellout.
A grab essentially. Bag of cuts and shite, yeah.
Yeah, this sounded like Tribe making just another album, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I don't know whether it was... put it this way, if we're still doing this podcast in 4 years' time, will I pick it as a classic album? I don't think so. But
that's probably because there are better Tribe albums.
Yeah, that's right. And I think it's a really good example of that. It's the sort of hip-hop I like. It's that sort of, I don't know, jazzy down tempo beats.
Yeah, it's jazz hip hop. It's that light. I mean, and De La Soul kind of invented this, and Gangsta, who we had, you know, we listened to a few weeks ago, were big on this, and obviously Tribe were. This is what they built their career on, which was it's sort of the antithesis to gangster rap.
Yes, absolutely. It's not gangster rap is the style of what it is, isn't it?
Not a lot of talk about you know the clips in your Uzi and you know how many bitches and hoes you've been hollering at.
And in a week where Kanye looks like he's going to be the next vice president of the United States when Trump goes around next time.
Kanye's had a bad week. He's absolutely lost his shit, and then he was rushed to hospital, which surprises nobody. Although, in the same week, De La Soul completely no-showed their Australian tour by skipping two dates and then performing for 15 minutes in the third, which also doesn't really surprise anybody, because the weed is quite good in Australia. But Tribe, I mean, some of their lyrics are incredibly out of date. The reference to Tony Romo hitting Witten, that's out of date because Tony Romo's now been benched. I bet they wish they could have that one back. Out of date as of this season. It's very chill. It's chill to the point of subdued, I almost thought. You know, it's sedate, but not quite sedated, but it is very, very, it's so laid back it's almost horizontal, but
yep.
That's both a criticism and a massive compliment because it is perfect to just have on.
Look, I can just imagine...
It doesn't occupy the front of the space. It just occupies all the rest of the space around whatever you're doing.
You know, I've never been to New York. I'm not black. But you know the sort of classic...
You're not black?
No, I'm sorry, dude. I hate to break it to you. I know you were pretty hungover last time you were here, but...
Why do you like hip-hop then, you fucking cultural traitor?
I can just imagine, you know, an arm out the side of the car
cruising
around.
No black man has ever said a midget either. Unless he was doing a New Zealand accent.
You know, cruising around the car, just chilling. Or, you know, maybe sitting out the back, smoking a J, chilling. It's that sort of music.
Sitting around
really
a campfire at a beach.
Yeah.
Just as the last.
Not too many beaches in New York, but anyway.
Was the Jersey Shore.
This was what I expected. And considering I was so disappointed by that album last week because it was just not what I expected. I didn't expect it to be like... an amazing record simply because of who they are and how long they've been doing it. But I expected something better than what they dished out. And this was, I wouldn't quite put it up there with the Prodigy as a example of an old...
Well, it didn't have the intensity of the Prodigy release.
No, but Tribe never had that intensity.
That's exactly right. Yeah, this is a really good example of what they do, and that's what you could say about the Prodigy album.
Shall we mention our keyword here? Shall we say that that's not their aesthetic?
It definitely fits the aesthetic. It definitely fits the aesthetic of what Tribe are and were and are about. It's sad to think of it this way, but you'd think that what the De La Soul album lacked was a singularity, a purpose, a point. What we said last week had no fucking point. This album had a point. The point was Fife was dying and or dead at the point of either recording or producing the album, and that gave it that singularity of purpose. It's sad that that's what it was, but they were together because Fife was dead, and they wanted to put a tribute out there. So they were not. They had a cutting edge to everything they were doing. They're saying, "Fucking, we're gonna get this right." Whereas De La Soul could just kind of faff off into, you know, 16 directions of masturbatorial glory, and it didn't matter because there was nothing riding on it. If it was their last ever album, one of them was on the slab. Damn straight, they would have done a better job. So yeah, I suggest what we need to do is start killing members of our old bands so they start doing their job properly.
I think
the next AC/DC album should be fantastic. They've only got like one or two of them left.
I think they absolutely wanted to make a Tribe album, like a proper, an album that everyone would go, oh, this is a Tribe Called Quest album. And
it is a Tribe Called Quest, folks, in case you've been wondering who this band is who are called Tribe.
Tribe. And like you could put this on for someone, and if they knew what a Tribe Called Quest sounded like, they would absolutely go, oh, yeah, this is a Tribe album. And you wouldn't be able to tell that it's a 2016 Tribe album. Like,
apart from maybe the fucking guests might give you an indication.
And some of the references, yeah.
Yeah. And obviously Tony Romo playing quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys makes it completely out of date for this year.
Very funny. So it was, I enjoyed it. And considering this was the second of the two albums I listened to, that was a very good thing to happen to me, so.
I'm getting the impression that you didn't enjoy our other new album this week. And set the scene, folks, for those who were listening last week. I made a joke that you know, at least you're not going to pick that fucking new Metallica album. And then Bezo went and picked that fucking new Metallica album, which is called Hardwired ... to Self-Destruct after the lead single. The biggest shock I had when this album popped up on my radar was the fact that, as I Instagrammed immediately afterwards, the album goes for 2 hours and 37 minutes.
Oh, my God.
Now, and you think, well, and I thought the only middle-aged bloke that was going on with Metallica was Lars, but admittedly, that's because it's effectively like a 3-CD effort. And the third CD is cover versions and extra tracks and a whole bunch of live stuff from...
Which I did not listen to.
Well, it interesting argument with that. No, I did talk, to, you know, did have some. So, I've been struggling with what I think about this album, Hardwired, because it's basically a double album. All told, it's about 80 minutes, so it's almost like the length of a normal CD. But it's there's lots of different thoughts I have about it. And as I can see, you've got in the car and decided to fuck off.
yes, in. In many ways, I have.
Basically, you just got the current fact of. But I've been talking to people. I mean, I've liked Metallica for quite a few years, but I'm not, not right back into the. I mean, I like the early '80s stuff, but I wasn't a fan back in the early '80s. So the dude who introduced me to Metallica, was our common friend and semi regular guest on the pod, Adam H. Photo. So we thought we might actually get Adam on as our special Metallica correspondent. To give his thoughts on the album, because he's also listened to it, and
because he is our resident Metallica expert. So
yes, he is our special Metallica correspondent. So after this short break, we'll have him on. So the actual album of Hardwired and Self-Destruct only goes for about 78 minutes, and it's meant to be like a double album, so it runs till Halo on Fire, and then there's the second half. The original thought I had about the live album was that it was completely superfluous and what was the fucking point? I had more thoughts about that later. What they're doing is, I mean, you picked this album last week with comments about the idea was that the talk you'd heard about it was that they were recapturing old glories, and you talked about it in the context of the Prodigy album, like we've talked about this Tribe Called Quest album, and like we talked about a lot of albums by old bands that we've reviewed over the last 2 years. And we always come up against this challenge, the two opposing philosophies. Do you review the album as a standalone piece of stuff, or do you review it in the context of everything that's come before it? And I think that's actually the real challenge with this album in particular. Underlines those questions. It puts them in a real relief. The reason I say that is because this album seems to be a conscious effort to reach back to the early '80s sound. They're definitely playing with the pace of the early '80s. There's double kicks and there's flashing guitars and there's Hetfield is gurning and Lars is wanking and Kirk's wanking, Lars is flailing. They're hitting all the usual themes of, you know, war and destruction and PTSD and violent mental illness. Basically, it's music for white dudes who are up clock towers. Oh, I think I can see Adam.
Ring, ring, pussy, it's shut down. Hey. Fashion week and it's shut down. Went to the show, sitting in the front row in a black tracksuit and it's shut down.
Hello, Adam.
Hi, Adam.
There he is.
Did my Twitter sledging wake you out of your stupor to get you on?
No, I just had to go and rescue my daughter who
fell down
was doing 7-year-old daughter things, mostly crying.
Was she crying because she listened to the new Metallica album?
Quite possibly.
So I was just saying that one of the challenges with reviewing an old band doing a new album is that do you take in consideration all the old stuff they did? Stop breathing into your microphone. And sounds like you're on top of Kosciuszko with a gale blowing, bro.
Really?
Yeah, it's like...
Hang on. Let me turn it down.
It's
hot over here and shit.
Oh, is it getting hacked in here? So take off all your clothes. So they're clearly going for that early 80s aesthetic. With
we're not live at the moment, are we? I just did, yeah. Just spent the coke. I was actually just admiring the Shane Watson-esque review in the cricket.
Yes, never review Kettlebra, seems to be the message.
I tell you, it is the actual Shane Watson memorial. Dead rubber, this one. Australia.
Yes, it is. I think we used those exact words in the fucking in the first half. The Shane Watson Memorial Dead Rubber Trophy. He shagged his way through quite a lot. So we're just going to stick this on at the end of the thing. But they're clearly going for an 80s aesthetic with it, with the pace that they're trying to generate. The riffs are more 90s, though, you'd have to say. The actual song structure, three-chord, chunky fucking progressions they're running through is much more load-reload era song structure. There's a little bit of that kind of neoclassical twiddling that they used to do in the 80s. You know, if it ain't Baroque, don't fix it. But you can see what they're trying to do. Do they achieve it?
Well, no, of course not, because what they're trying to do is everything they've done in the last 30 years in one album.
Yep.
So there's a little bit of thrash, there's a little bit of pop, there's even some two-part vocal harmony, you know, vocalizer work going on there in the middle, and it's just a bit of a mess of everything. It's a lot of nothing and not much of anything, really.
There's a lot of Metallica by numbers, isn't there? There's a lot of... Yeah. This is what a Metallica song is supposed to sound like, so we'll do what a Metallica song is supposed to sound like.
The one thing I could sort of come to explain, and you and I will know this because we were there, but maybe I'm not sure if we've told Bezo this story yet, but I'm going to equate this album to Commodore Amiga music of the early 90s. I'll tell you how we get there. When Dr. Yobo and I were...
Are we going along? Is this going to be a long trip? Am I going to need a packed lunch and a thermos?
You may. But anyway, we were a little enamored in creating Amiga mod file music, four-track music, using the samples ripped out of a game called Pinball Dreams. And in Pinball Dreams, it had this one sample that was like a guitar sample, and it went chug, 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 chug. Yes. And it was a pretty cool sample. The problem was that we ended up using that sample in pretty much every single song we wrote.
Yes.
So no matter what there was always too much chug-a-chug. And as soon as I heard this album, all I could think to myself of is there's just way too much chug-chug-chug-chug-chug-chug-chug-chug-chug. Because that's all it is. Every song's in the same key. Every song has that same, you know, let's just, you know, bang on that E string kind of riff.
It's the same fucking three chords. Yeah. And there's a predictability and a reassurance to that. You're like, I know exactly where this is going to go. And that kind of makes you feel, oh, that's cool, that's warm, that's nostalgic. But it also makes you feel bored. And that's a problem. And you know what, one of the interesting things about this, and I was talking about this with another metalhead type person who was much less dark on the album than you or I are, I think. And I'll get to what she thought. a bit later. But this is the first album, I believe, that Kirk hasn't had a writing credit on. So this is all James and all Lars, and they also produced it all. So this is basically all the riffs are Hetfield. And it's just, it's like if Malcolm Young wrote all of AC/DC. All you've got is rhythm guitar. It's just riffs. It's so much riffs.
Sorry, Breeze,
we should probably let you in here.
Well, no, I just thought you might like to hear that the opinions of because I've only got a very short piece to say on this album. But I thought you might like to hear the opinions of a non-Metallica fan. And this was an absolute wall of fucking boredom.
Yep.
I got two tracks into this album and looked at how long the album was and thought of how much Dr. Yobo would, you know, piss on me from a great height if I didn't listen to the whole thing, and just thought, oh my God, I've got to listen to this whole fucking thing. And even when I got to, was it When a Blind Man Cries? I think was like the soft sort of.
You're actually in the third CD by then, because that's an old Deep Purple cover, not a good one. But by then you'd actually done your job.
Finally a different song, and I was like, but this song is fucking terrible. It's really, really bad, and I am not enjoying it. Can you get auto-tune for drums? Because this, like, we talked about...
Lars is not a good drummer.
I don't know if you heard the After Dark from last week or the week before, but I just absolutely went nuts about the drumming on an album we listened to a couple of weeks ago. And this was the complete opposite. Every fucking kick drum just sounded like, you know, came out of a machine. And this is from someone that loves hip hop, where it all comes out of a fucking machine. You know what I mean? I know what machine drumming sounds like, and this was worse than fucking something that comes out of an MPC player.
And it's one of the things that I really noticed. First of all, I just thought, God, it's got no life. Like the whole recording, not just the drums especially, because Lars is a dreadful drummer. Yeah. If you go and you actually listen to the live tracks at the end of the deluxe album and hear how the band has grown used to how shit he is, basically. Yeah. Like they know where he's going to speed up and slow down. So much so that the concert, I actually went and saw him last year, as I said, they played And Justice for All, and there's a bit where he's supposed to come back in, and he comes in a bar early, like, how many times have they played this song? And he comes in with his bit of bar early, and you could see the band look around at each other and just go, "Fuck, Lars, not again!" Like
35 years into the job,
but the 35
fucking years into the job, and he's still getting that wrong.
But you know what the funny thing is, that because I remember I said they do desk tapes of all their live recordings, and that's what the bit at the end of this third CD is. It's just a desk tape from that show they did.
Yeah. I'll just say, folks, was a Record Store Day performance earlier this year. And also that tacked on the end is a live performance of the single Hardwired. But the live performance is almost entirely stuff from their first two albums. It's very 1980. 2, 3, 4 heavy, which is, I think that's really interesting, because it clearly says this is the stuff we're trying to do. This is what we're trying to reach back to.
And it almost invalidates the entire album that precedes it as well, because you realize
exactly right. You realize
what it should sound like.
You realize what they've lost is the ability to write fucking songs, because there's so much more light and shade in those songs, even though they're being played sloppily. Because they're pretty sloppy. I mean, we've heard a lot of fucking live Metallica over the years. Those are pretty sloppy renditions of Metallica.
And they're still a pretty good live band. I'm a card carrying member. They will come to Australia off the back of this album. They will tour 23 dates, and I will go.
The problem is that they have a new double album to tour, so they'll be playing lots of songs off that one, won't they?
Well, they played one song off the new album last time off Death Magnetic. They opened with a song off Death Magnetic, probably the best song off the album, which was Cyanide, and that was the end of it. And 23 songs later, they had ran through their back catalogue and never even looked at it again. They know. They know.
This is basically the opinion I had on the album, was that the live stuff kind of highlighted the problem, was that they're not as good a songwriter as they used to be. They're not doing, their ideas aren't as clever. Ironically, they used to be better at doing cover versions. The Dio, actually, it's not a Dio cover. It's a Rainbow cover, which was Richie Blackmore, the dickhead who left Deep Purple, and Dio had a band together in the late 70s, and they did a whole bunch of covers of that. That was quite good, but so most Metallica fans I've spoken to have got the attitude that you and I have. One I talked to said, okay, that's all well and good, but why does an old band, why can't you just enjoy it as an album? Is this not better than pick random album released in 2016 off the street? Yeah. Why can't you just enjoy it? Because there are songs on this album that I really enjoy. I really enjoy Monster of Flow. I really enjoy Hardwired's a good, dumb, basically punk rock. Hetfield really is a frustrated punk rock guitarist.
Can I just say that could be the worst lyric of the year?
Oh, the lyrics are fucking cretinous.
Like that chorus could be the worst bit of lyric. You know, Bob Dylan would be turning grave.
Bob Dylan would not be getting a Nobel Prize for that one.
Dreadful. But you watch, they'll play it live and everybody will sing along like, you know, the dumb idiots that we all are. And it will work perfectly. But I'd say when that was the lead-off single for the album, I just listened and go, that could be the worst. Like, whoever's writing the lyrics just should stop now, because that's dreadful.
It's James Hetfield.
Yeah, that's right. And that was my overall impression too. The three songs that they led off with instantly made me dislike this album, because it reminded me of inferior version, like this, they made this the inferior version of something. So Hardwired is Damaged Incorporated.
That was a good shout, because you tweeted me, all you said is it starts with Damaged Incorporated and goes downhill from there, because that's basically what they've done. Because when you were on and we've had a classic, we did Ride the Lightning, which leads off with, does it lead off with Damage? I don't think Damage is the first
track.
Damage is the last track, isn't it?
Damage is the last track on Master Puppets, which is the classic, yeah. But look, the funny thing is that they lead off with the three worst songs on the album, probably. And the fourth song I actually really liked, Tomorrow When We Die, I thought was actually pretty interesting, because it didn't...
At that point, I was...
Yeah, you know, that's
by the
right.
time the fourth song you give started, it up. I was ready to give it all away, so...
I didn't mind the sound of the first. I think every one of those songs should have been cut in half. There is no need. Yep. Then that's kind of the problem when you've got a self-recorded, self-produced album released on your vanity label. There is nobody there to tell you 6 to 8 minute songs, get fucked. Nobody wants a triple fucking album. You guys are full of shit.
Interestingly enough, because when I bought tonight, before I came, like I re-bezoed the album just to sort of remind myself again, because I listened to it a couple of days ago again. I thought, just going to have a quick tweet. And pretty much every song on the second CD and most of them on the first CD, to get to the vocal, you're plus a minute at least.
There's
a minute of, at least a minute of sort of introductory wankery. Yeah.
So they're trying to ape the feel of the old songs, but they're not actually giving this. I mean, the point of those long intros in the first place were, you would go into some long, winding, Kirk-led fucking neoclassical intro and then eventually end up with the master riff and the master fucking verse and chorus structure. But generally it's just...
That's pretty much the entire album, because what I have always liked about, like I've always said that I thought James was one of the best riffers in the world, because all their songs were based off.
He's a punk rock guitarist, really.
If you hear the first, I still maintain that Enter Sandman is the best heavy rock pop song ever written.
Yeah.
Because you hear that first five notes and you know exactly where you're going. Like, it's that riff is so well known. You know, they play the first three chords of Master of Puppets and every person in the crowd that goes to see them is up. Like, they know what they're listening to as soon as it hits. With this album, it's because it's just that constant, you know, you're waiting to see which one of the
three chords over again. Yeah.
It's just the same intro with different lyrics and different things. And yeah, it's just, it's, I did approach it by sort of thinking, if I didn't know that these guys had a back catalogue 30 years deep, and this was the first album I've ever heard, and I'd never heard of Metallica, would I still like this album? And by the end, no.
No.
Because, like you said, it's just boring. But the thing
is, as soon as you see it's like a triple album of 2 hours 37, you immediately judge them as being fucking self-indulgent wankers. If they'd edited, if they cut every song in half, because if you've got a 6 to 8 minute song is fine if the song goes off in different directions during it, but none of them ever fucking do in this album. If you cut every song in half and you made a 40-minute album, like the length of that fucking Helmet album that we reviewed last week, it would be passable. It wouldn't be any worse than that Helmet album. It would have some good riffs. It would might be quite a lot of fun. But
this album
they didn't do that. They deliberately didn't do that. And as a result, fuck them.
Look, for how many episodes have I been defending long songs? And, you know, this wanted me to go and say, fucking go and listen to some punk music and write a 2-minute song, for fuck's sake. You know, seriously, there's less wanking in a bloody teenage dorm room than in this album.
So there is.
It's just, and like that editor thing, or in this case, a producer, like they absolutely need a producer to fucking whack them over the head and go, no.
We're not putting
a 13-minute intro.
We're not having a triple album.
And it's that producer.
And who would have told them not to put the fucking live versions on the not live album on the end, which underlines the fucking point that these songs are not as good as what they used to do. I mean, it's
that's right. And even as I said, like there's some good ideas in there. There are some actual interesting bits. There's a couple of good songs. Yeah. There's a couple of bits within good songs. Man Unkind has a great little rollicking riff that you get to about 2.5 minutes into the song.
Yes.
Producer just would have gone, hey, shit, great idea. Write a 3-minute song based off that.
This would have been a great punk rock album. If they'd released it, if they'd recorded it and released it as a 35-minute punk rock album and just thrashing out every riff and Hetfield blaring it, and that would have worked perfectly well. It would not have been a Metallica album, but at this stage, you know, at what point as a band with a long history are you a prisoner to that fucking history? And I think that's kind of where Metallica are right now.
Well,
they're fucked no matter what they do. They might as well.
It's that reverse Patreon thing all over again. We should just be yes. paying to stop. Look, because I am quite happy for them to come out every 3 years. I will pay enormous amounts of money to go and see them live and play their back catalogue because they're great at it. They play it really well.
And just do that thing where they tour one album. Like they go out and they play fucking Kill 'Em All end to end. With all the B-sides and the rarities as the encore. Yep. And they come out and play... Yeah.
Shut up and take my money.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. Exactly right.
There is absolutely no need for a new album from these guys, and there's especially no need for three of the bloody...
Particularly when all this is an excuse to go on tour. That's all the album exists to do. There's no reason for it to be any good. There's no reason for it to exist. It's just a justification to go on tour. But, you know...
There are artists. Come on.
Yeah, well, the thing is, right, if they enjoyed making this record and they want to, I'm not going to slag them off for making the record, but I don't have to say it's good. And there are
I'm not sure I believe it was done with the greatest of artistic intent. I mean, we've had this discussion many a time as well. Why did they make this record? If they just made it as a gap filler, as a justification to go out and tour songs that aren't this, what the fuck was the point?
Mm.
Well, they could have just released another B-sides and rarities and fucking cover versions album, which ironically is the stuff I enjoy the most of theirs. I actually enjoy Metallica playing other people's songs more than I enjoy Metallica playing their own songs, because they've got a tendency towards, if you give them the opportunity, they will wank. They will spend 6 minutes not going anywhere. But if you give them someone else's song, if you give them fucking Stone Cold Crazy by Queen, they will thrash the shit out of it and do a really good job.
Yeah. Anyway.
Look, there is one positive. There is one positive, and that is that I chose not to do the entire review in my James Hetfield voice. Because that was on the cards. I thought about
Come on, you've got to give us at least one.
I'm not. I couldn't possibly do that. No, I couldn't possibly do that.
Just one. Come on.
I can't do that! Yeah! Because my children are asleep.
There it is.
And that's about as much of that as I can take as well, so.
Deary me. Look, just because the Australians are winning in the cricket, you know, it's...
It appears to be stumps. Nathan Lyon is winning. Is winning the day. So Bezo, which tracks would you like to put in the mixtape?
None.
I might find the shortest one.
I highly recommend Tomorrow When We Die. That's the peak of the number.
There are some tracks in there you think that would be good, but you could stop it. You could stop it after 3.5 minutes, and that really wouldn't. That really wouldn't hurt, you know? And I know that you know, complaining about effectively free content, because if you buy the album, you know, you're paying the same for 78 minutes as you are for 36. But, yeah.
Yeah, I realise I'm morphing that song into another song. It's called Now That We're Dead, not Tomorrow That We're
Dead. That's why I called it Pretend That We're Dead by L7.
Yeah.
We pretend that we're dead. Yeah. Man Unkind's a good track too.
Hey,
actually, Man Unkind, I think, is one of the few ones with writing credit from Kirk on it.
Yes.
Before you go, Adam, I just briefly would be interested to hear your thoughts because some mates of mine, or one mate of mine, and some other people did like a version this week.
This is the bit where Bezo clangs that he's mates with fucking with. Anyway.
Well, no, I was sort of drop
the name. Go on.
I was weirdly proud of Trials, and the weird bit is
not a Briggs though. He fucking hates Briggs. He fucking hates.
Well, I don't know from Barisoke, but the thing is that this song could not have like this song and the response, because I saw on Facebook and Twitter
listeners, Bezo is referring to a cover version of Paul Kelly's "Dumb Things" performed by Paul Kelly and AB Original, made up of Briggs and Trials, who are Australian rappers. Thank you.
So there was two things I thought about this. One was, even 5 years ago, this might not have been possible. I just don't know whether hip-hop would have been in place.
They would have got the Hilltops!
Yeah, Hilltops could have done it, but these guys aren't exactly
names. Nah. But it's Triple J. It's not like they're on Triple M.
Yes, and this is my other point is, I don't listen to Triple J. I'm probably never going to listen to Triple J again. But this is the only place on Australian radio that something like this can happen, because it's the only place that the artists trust enough to let this sort of thing like a version happen. If Triple M was doing like a version, it would be commercialised.
It would be airborne covering AC/DC.
Yeah, but
otherwise known as Airborne.
Because the artists actually trust Triple J to do this the right way, that they're actually invested in trying to do a really good version. Like, they're trying to bring something to the table. They're not just rocking up and
rolling through a cover. But also, Triple J's remit is broader than any other radio station. So the point of like a version is you take band from genre A and you get them to cover a song from genre not A. That was always the point of like a version. You're not going to do that on Triple M because the only genre you're working in is rock. So all you're going to get is rock bands covering other rock bands. They did that a little bit when Andrew Denton had his breakfast show there, and they would get bands to cover songs that were completely outside their space. Like, they got the Wiggles in to do Long Way to the Top.
He started that on his talk show on Channel 7, where he would have a band come in. And he would pull a card out, and they would get band X that was absolutely nothing like them, and have the length of the show to go and figure out how to do a cover version of it.
Or at least that was the conceit of the piece. And it was possible that their people had been told, you know, week in advance so they could go and record. Yeah. They could go and figure out how to play "Jump in My Car" by Ted Mulry.
Yeah, but my point is, Spotify and YouTube and all those things that I love can't do what Triple J does, and normal commercial radio can't do it either.
No.
And this is what shits me about people that want to crap all over Triple J because it's no longer for them, you know, who want Taylor Swift in the hottest 100. But Triple J is a very unique Australian thing. Just leave it the fuck alone. There's plenty. If you don't like Triple J or if Triple J is not for you, there's plenty of other stuff. It's not like you're starved of places to go and listen to music. Triple J does some really unique things and some really interesting things that have a far bigger sort of social context than just music. And why do you have to tear it down? I just don't understand. I got a little bit angry about when I was thinking about sort of the widest, like, it's an institution.
But Tay-Tay not being in the hottest 100 is sexist.
Look, but here's the thing, though. I mean, as much as we all slag off Triple J because, you know, as we've had...
I love Triple J. Triple J is my best friend.
Double J is your best friend probably now. But, you know, if boomers are horrible, then Gen X is going to be worse. And this is the example. Yeah, because we all go, oh, they don't play...
Thank you for hitting the Bulls podcast aesthetic, which is we apologise in advance for how fucking awful we're going to be when we get old.
But in the midst of all that whining, Triple J has actually almost tripled its market share. You go and look at its ratings, and back when we were listening to it in the mid-90s, it was in the 2.5 to 3% range. It's in the 6 to 6.5% range on any average rating scale.
It's beating commercial radio. I mean, that's partly because commercial radio has been in full speed reverse, but it's increased its market share. And that's why whoever the new breakfast radio fucking pairing is to take over from Knobhead and Flog. I don't know who the fuck they are now.
Yeah, there's six of them or something like that, I think. But it's a super group. Who knows? But, I mean, this is the thing. And this should tell you everything you want to know about commercial radio is that the top station in Sydney now is actually Smooth FM. And Smooth FM got to the top of the Sydney radio charts because their bosses said, you know what? What we want you to do, breakfast radio announcers, is to play music and shut the fuck up.
Don't they do it all they all do it pre-recorded. They get Cameron Daddo in like once a month to just record all the links. Maybe it's
Andrew. They have to reanimate it.
It's one of the Daddos.
It's essentially a Spotify playlist with Spotify voices.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah,
just linking just the songs together. And they leave that for the news.
Hey, how about that local sporting team and traffic shit on the M3? And he's Natalie Imbruglia.
No, nothing that upbeat us. Like, hey, doesn't it feel so good? Going right back. I hope you've got yourself a nice warm cup of tea.
The guy who does that is on Triple J on the lunchtime, and thank Christ he's leaving too, because he could be the worst radio announcer on the planet. Whatever he's... I don't even know his name.
I know Karen Wheatley's fucking off.
No. It's a guy.
Not Louis.
Yes, that's the one.
He is a very love him or hate him aesthetic.
I just reckon he sounds like the work experience kid got locked in the studio and there's people outside just pointing at the microphone going, speak into that. Like he's the pipe, you know.
You say that, but you're still farting into yours. I can still hear them.
Oh, well.
Professional.
That's right. Yeah, mine's a headset mic that answers Skype calls and work through. So.
There's the problem. So Bezo was making a point about the fact that his friends are on... were on like a version and ours weren't. But did you finish that point, Bezo?
I think he was trying to ask what my opinion of it was because he thinks I hate everything. So
you clearly don't hate everything because there's plenty of things that I hate and I've reserved the right to hate them. Look, I'd like to make one serious point here, which is that if Paul Kelly wasn't on that track, would it have got it? I mean, if it wasn't very overtly blessed by the owner operator of that track, would it have had the same currency? And secondly, this is a song from a fucking movie about young Einstein. Why do we hold it in such respect? It was a throwaway song in 1988. Why is it now the fucking national anthem?
I actually, somebody else asked me that during the week, and I said no, because in the background, they're playing guitar is the best male vocalist in the country.
Yeah, Dan Sultan was a good pull-in.
He's a fucking unreal singer.
And their keyboardist, I understand, is highly reputable as well. No, it was a stupid, he's on that album.
He's on that album a fair bit, actually. Their actual album. So
yeah. So we're gonna review the Reclaim Australia album probably next week, I think.
I'm gonna tip that Bezo's gonna love it and you're gonna hate it.
I don't think I'll hate it because I mean we've reviewed a couple of hip hop albums in the last couple of weeks and I've just sort of given up on
giving up.
It's like, giving up
the will to live.
I like hip hop that has intelligent lyrics. Yeah, look, Bezo doesn't listen to the lyrics in hip hop, which is kind of like not listening to the notes in music. I mean, the entire fucking point of hip hop is the words.
Well, I think that's what actually makes it go extend out beyond that audience is that the lyrics to that piece, those breakdowns in there are so relevant. Like I literally just read a whole bunch of stuff about the Australia Day change date crap, and there it was in that song, you know, specifically referenced, and bits about healthcare and welfare
and Dondale, you know, bashing the shit out of small children.
Yeah, fucking, it's so relevant, right? And that's what rap's really good at, I reckon, is that it. Because it's so freestyle, they can just go, well, yeah, we had these lyrics, but here's something else we want to talk about, and just drop it into a rhyme. You know, and it's so much more powerful because it's kind of that immediate message.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost a changeable message.
Like when we wrote that rap about the teachers at our school and how fucked they were.
I think you're both right. I think the fact that
I think you're right in that we're right. I think you're definitely right on that one.
It's a very catchy, popular Aussie old school song. Like I listened to that, and
how many times have you sung that song, Adam?
Well, yeah, quite a few. And actually, the funny
how
thing
times, is, you sung it, but how many times have you performed that song?
Well, I'm about to go and play it tomorrow on a acoustic trio cover version boat thing that we do. And actually, the lounge feel that's got at the start is the exact way we play it because we're an acoustic three-piece, so we lounge the fuck out of it, basically.
So what you need is somebody to come along and fucking rap over the top of that. Remain relevant.
Spitfire and to our 70-plus-year-old audience.
Get him to rap about the house prices and the bloody flag and Pauline Hanson and stuff that's relevant to boomers.
I was just going to say, the thing that sort of has overrushed, because I actually just finished writing an editorial for the paper about all of this sort of stuff.
And clang!
We've all got stuff going on, man. When it goes on our website and we say, what do you think about this change today? Half of the people, of course, don't read the story and just blame the Muslims. They say, they should just get out of their country, shouldn't they? And like, you first, sunshine.
Who's going to score 140s now, you fucking idiot?
That's right.
So I think the fact that it resonated across, like, because I saw a lot of a broad spectrum of people
on Twitter
and on Facebook share this. Like, on Facebook, like not good. My normal, not the normal crew that I would expect. Like people like Peter Layla sharing it, and I wouldn't have thought he was a hip hop fan.
He's leftish and he's old enough to remember Paul Kelly doing it. Basically, for an old white dude, that was Paul Kelly with some friends.
That's the thing. Paul Kelly makes it accessible to a lot of people to make that message more palatable. But also the fact that there's a whole heap of shit going on that a lot of people don't feel is very Australian. Like, we're supposed to be better than that.
Yep.
Listing out all that shit that people are uncomfortable with, that doesn't feel like it is what makes people Australian. And it's just like, here's 3 minutes of it listing out all the shit that we're getting wrong. I think it's actually the perfect time to do a song like this. I think it's slapping you in the face with it, and I think that's what sort of needs to be done. Whether it has, I hope it has an effect. I don't know whether it will.
I very much doubt it. It's just a disposable, like a version. I mean, it won't ever be released as a song, unless it's just going to be a YouTube clip. So it's going to be like one of Waleed's viral fucking rants on the project. It's going to make no difference apart from for the people who shared it on Twitter. And it'll make the people on Twitter feel good, and it won't make any difference to the people who don't give a fuck. And that's just the nature of the world now.
Yeah, but maybe that's where the change has to come from. As I said, the people who will share, who might pick that up on their Facebook feed, and in the midst of all of the actual Reclaim Australia people going, you know, oh, screw this and fuck them, and they can all go back where they came from. Maybe if they actually are allowed to hear the message in a language they understand, I guess, which is it has to be Bogan cover songs, then that's fine too. Maybe, you know, it's just chipping away at the wall. Who knows? So it's
Paul Kelly didn't look good in that song, in that video. He looked a little bit...
He looks old.
Parkinson's. He's not looking super flash, I have to admit.
He's had a lot of drug use in his life, man. I don't know whether you'd expect him to hold up that well into his older years.
Yeah.
Especially like 7:30 in the morning. Come on, man. He's a rocker. He doesn't get out of bed before midday.
He was just getting in.
Well, there you go.
He is probably the only artist that I possibly could have had at the venues I ran that I never got. Like, he was just probably... No, he absolutely was too big to play at the Alley, but I'm sure... he's the sort of guy that if you convinced him, he might have done like a side show or a secret show or something like that.
Yeah, he might have done a little acoustic intimate.
Well, we got Dave Graney that way once. He was playing a headline show on the Saturday night, and he wanted to play another show. So we played this show that we weren't allowed to advertise. and of course no one showed up because we didn't do any advertising. But it was still awesome, you know. Watching Dave Graney live with about 15 people's not a bad experience to have. So,
the alley doing rock and roll was where he hired. I didn't kind of mangled that, but I think you get the point.
Almost as good as the song.
Mm-hmm. Adam, thank you for joining us. That was much appreciated. Our special Metallica correspondent.
Pleasure as always.
I've listened to too many podcasts. I feel like I need to ask you what you want to plug. Anything you want to plug at this stage, apart from the newspaper that you own?
Oh, that I own? No, not quite. Run. I wish I wouldn't work. I wouldn't work as hard if I did.
You're the only man who's keeping that place afloat.
And we'll talk to you when we review the new Maroon 5 album.
In hell.
If you're going to say that, you need to say it with a Hetfield voice. Inhale!
I've told you, I don't like anything Maroon 5 past 1995. Come on, let it go.
Sure. Thanks, Adam.
There you go.
All right,
well, that got rid of him. Shall we talk about the new albums that we'd like to have this week?
We can go back to slagging him off the way we usually do when he's not here.
No, that was great. That was good because it gave us another perspective. Because as I said, I've kind of gone back and forth on that album, and Adam was one of the people who introduced me to. He's still on here, isn't he?
There, I'm still here.
Get the fuck off! Come on, get out of it, you mongrel!
We can hear your heavy breathing. That's not yeah, we,
no, no, we you can... hang up first. You hang up first. Say it.
See ya.
That was pretty good, I thought.
Mm. Yeah, that was good.
Anyway, we're not done yet. We've still got to talk about what we're going to talk about next week. I've turned into Phil Sims. When we talk about next week, we got to talk about... So we've done a lot of fucking... old bands coming back, doing new stuff. So I went back through my fucking likes and earmark stuff and all the rest of it. Just like, where are two bands I've never fucking heard of that I want to listen to for this week? So the two bands I've never fucking heard of that we're going to listen to this week are a band called The Peep Temple, who are out of Melbourne, I think. They've got a new album out. And a band called Simo, S-I-M-O, all caps. And I think they're not from Melbourne or anywhere on this side of the Pacific. So those are two bands that I'm going to make you listen to next week.
What was the second one, sorry?
So Simo, S-I-M-O,
mm-hmm.
and The Peep Temple. And they probably play music of some description. They were fucking...
You don't know what the Simo album's called?
I can tell you after the fact, but I don't have my telephone here. It was actually released earlier in the year. It's been something I earmarked on my from Discovery Weekly and so forth a while okay. back.
Well, for the classic, after that little Triple J interlude, I went down a little Paul Kelly. And I realize I have picked a Paul Kelly album before, but that Paul Kelly album's like a bit of an anomaly. It's not what he normally does.
Yeah, I recall that as being shit house.
Yeah, well, you don't like bluegrass, so.
Oh, that was it. It was. I knew it was shit house for a reason.
So I almost cheated and picked the Paul Kelly
Def Leppard Hysteria
A to Z recordings, which are on Spotify, and
no,
is 102 tracks,
and still isn't as long as that Metallica album.
Probably not. No. Which like for anyone that likes Paul Kelly and hasn't listened to them, I don't know if you know the story behind it, but he started doing this email where you could subscribe to the email, and every week he would release another letter. So on the first week he'd release three tracks starting with the letter A, and then next week tracks starting with the letter B, and you sort of collect, like you downloaded them and collected them all. It was just a weird little experiment, and you could only do it if you had the back catalogue that he had. But they're freaking awesome recordings, like, you know, over I don't know how many different live shows. But I just couldn't decide on the definitive Paul Kelly album that I wanted to pick, so I'm going to go with the Funkors album to go with the other half of that crew. And I will go, because there's only a couple of albums on Spotify.
When's they were supposed to be due to come out with a new album, weren't they? Reclaim Australia project kind of sidetracked
you, man. I think it'll be next year. So I'm going to go with 2009's The Hangover. A little bit like the album you picked last week, do not expect razor sharp...
Are we talking big dumb fun?
Yeah, it's going to be big dumb fun. There's probably going to be some lyrics you'll groan at in terms of, you know,
wokeness.
Yes, there might be a bit of unwokeness.
Yes, there might be a bit of knuckle dragging patriarchy.
Yeah, like they're almost how can I put it? They're probably a little bit like Howard Stern in that. You know, you play.
Haven't been relevant since 1993.
Yeah, I was more thinking like you play up to a character for so long that, like it's almost like you can't be anything but the character.
Basically, you don't mean Howard Stern; you mean Dr. Yobbo.
Yeah, perhaps. Because
not just Metallica that's trapped inside a world of their own fucking creation here, man.
Because these guys started as 18-year-old fucking pissheads that had no idea what the world was.
Yeah.
But they're not those sort of guys now, and they probably weren't in 2009. But their band persona sort of...
Yeah. This is the same difficulty the fucking Beastie Boys had. Yeah. Was that they started out as a bunch of snotty frat boys, and then by by the like the late the mid 90s, they were totally not that, but they'd still had that. So they had to reinvent themselves like four or five times in order to get to a space where they were comfortable.
And that's what I find really interesting about this AB original album is that I don't know whether Funkors could have done this album because...
I think Briggs has got a lot to do with that.
Briggs...
He's got a certain gravity, and that's not just because he's a big dude.
Yeah, and he's got an activism. Like, Trials has got that activism, but he also is in a band that, you know, is known for taking the piss. Like, yeah. You know, it would be really hard for Funkors to pivot and do this fully political album. And I don't think they would want to. I think they enjoy playing this character. But, you know, you got to have those outlets for that sort of difference thing. But anyway.
It doesn't always work well when a band known for just fun and piss-taking tries to do political. I mean, fucking Green Day's last couple of albums have been, God, awful. Where they've gone from being the band that's sung about having a wank because there's nobody in the house and you're bored to a 47-minute rock opera about America under George W. Bush. No, not really. So those albums were Let Love Show the Way by Simo and Joy by the Peep Temple.
And they, for once, because I have been forgetting to do this, are actually in the playlist.
Well, I wasn't sure if that was a bugger of feature, because if you don't put them in until midweek, then people don't know what the albums are until they've listened to the podcast.
No, it's more that by the time we get to putting the albums in the podcast, I'm usually pretty toasted. So,
well, the problem is that I tend to lean on the playlist because playlist still matters. In fact, my phone has just flicked over into downloading, so down those tracks come to my phone. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, that was a good chat tonight.
That was a good yarn. It is now late, and we have had good times and the internet and all kinds of things.
All right, Doc. I'll catch you on the flip side.
You will do that.
See ya.
Professional.